the slaughter began. Hojip heard noises that would haunt him for the rest of his life. Tortured wails and terrible weeping, blown to him on the cruelest of winds. The Alfar seemed to know exactly where to find the soldiers. Arrows ripped through the air in all directions, and Hojip was hit by a stray missile that embedded itself in his leg. He clenched his jaw and swallowed the pain. Time dragged on, but at last the clattering of swords and screams of the wounded died away. The moon and stars broke through the cloud, revealing the carnage below. Corpses were strewn several deep across the battlefield, covering the ground like a gory carpet of torsos, limbs, and blood. Alfar stepped lightly over them, looking for survivors. The living were pulled out from under the dead and killed in the cruelest fashion. Hojip surveyed the slaughter, eyes welling with tears of helpless rage.
Ye gods have mercy! They've killed them all!
Try as he might, he couldn't see a single dead Alf.
How could you forsake your children, Palandiel?
Down below, an Alf was riding over the bodies. Her mount, a bull with monstrous horns, wore a metal visor, and its eyes emitted a fearsome red glow. She shouted an order, whereupon a band of Alfar waded through the corpses, slitting their throats and collecting their blood. Meanwhile, another band threw pitch and petroleum over the frames of the mangonels.
"I've got the choice of being slaughtered or burning to death," thought Hojip wretchedly.
Given the options, he decided to wait until the Alfar torched the mangonels, then pull the arrow from his leg and stab himself through the heart.
"I'd sooner kill myself than fall into their hands."
Just then the bull raised its head, looked straight at him, and snorted impatiently. Its rider followed its gaze. She was wearing a mask and a black gauze veil that obscured her features. Hojip watched as she raised her quarterstaff and barked an order. An archer raised his bow and took aim at the mangonel. The arrow hit him in the left shoulder. He lost his grip, rolled over the throwing arm, glanced off a strut, and landed on the soft carpet of bodies below.
"Get back! Get back, you devils!" he wailed, floundering among the corpses.
Already an Alf was beside him, snatching up a sword. Hojip thrust it forward, stabbing the Alf in the guts. The Alf stayed standing. Then, to Hojip's horror, he took hold of the sword and pulled it from his torso. Dark, almost black blood poured from the wound, but within an instant, the flow dried up.
"He healed himself," Hojip wriggled backward. "No wonder I couldn't see any elvish casualties. Palandiel, what have we done to be punished like this?"
"Listen, White," said the elf on the bull. "Your gods took mercy on you and spared your life. Return to your kingdom and tell your monarch what you've seen. The immortal siblings wish it to be known that the Alfar will not yield. Teon has blessed us with new powers."
The bull took a step closer.
"I'm sure you can testify to their effect, unless you'd like another demonstration."
"No!"
Hojip shrank away from her.
"I'll do as you say, and tell Prince Malin."
"Then go," she commanded.
Hojip struggled to his feet and ran for his life, ignoring the pain in his shoulder and leg. Turning her bull, Onduri congratulated her warriors. The little band had passed the test. After drinking the dark water, the warriors had ridden into battle and survived their wounds.
"Sitalia's fairies will be next," she thought grimly. "Alandor, prepare to meet your doom."
She looked down at the trampled bodies, imagining the wonderful sculptures that she would make from the skeletons. Any leftover bones would be transported to the capital and added to Nagsor and Nagsar's tower. Kingdom of Goregar, Girdlegard, late autumn, 6,235th solar cycle. The autumn weather refused to smile on Tungdil and Mir. Most of their overland journey was spent in the pouring rain. Mir, fearing they would catch a chill from sleeping outside in damp clothes, insisted on gathering herbs for an infusion to protect them from the cold. Knowing that they couldn't afford to lose time to illness, Tungdil knocked back cup after cup of the stuff. Unfortunately, he started the regime too late and developed a nasty cough that left him tired and weak. The pair had no choice but to break their journey at an inn, where they could sleep on a dry mattress out of the rain until the first big storm had passed. The innkeeper's wife could barely conceal her astonishment at the appearance of two such unusual guests.
"I'll make you some hearty broth, Mr. Goldhand," she promised, when he was safely tucked up in bed. "I've got plenty of herbs in the kitchen. They work wonders against coughs and colds."
"Really?" said Mir enthusiastically.
"I'll make an infusion. We'll have him back on his feet in no time."
She snuffed out all but one of the lights, placing the remaining candle in a holder, which she left on the table by his bed.
"I'll be back soon," she said soothingly, bending down to kiss him. "Try to get some sleep."
In the doorway she stopped and looked at him with an odd expression. Tungdil lay on his back, sinking into the mattress of wool and straw, and looked sleepily at the shadows cast by the candle on the whitewashed walls. The more he looked at them, the more menacing they became, closing in on him steadily like wild beasts as he lay, unarmed and unarmored, between the sheets. It felt like he were at the mercy of a vague, intangible evil, like the sinister fog in the outer lands.
"Confounded candle," he grumbled, reaching over to snuff it out.
His fingers, weak from the fever, groped clumsily for the wick, brushing against it without extinguishing the flame. Though he had barely touched the candle, it was sitting so loosely in the holder that it toppled over, landed on the floor, and rolled, still burning, under his bed. A moment later, the straw poking out beneath the mattress was on fire.
"Damn and double damn!"
Tungdil tried to get up, but succeeded only in falling out of bed. He watched as the mattress went up in flames.
"Mir!" he shouted. "Mir, the bed's on fire!"
Silence.
"Fire!"
His shouts turned to coughs. Glowing embers flew in all directions, spiraling through the chamber and settling on the floor and furniture, spreading the blaze. Soon the room was unbearably hot.
"Fire!"
he shouted desperately. Exhausted and feverish, he lay on the rough floorboards, unable to move. The crackling grew louder, and the fire began to hiss and roar. The whole room had become an oven, and still no one came to his aid.
"Do you want me to die here, Vrakus?"
At last the door flew open. Tongues of fire licked greedily toward him, fanned by the rush of air.
"Mr. Goldhand,"
called a gruff male voice.
"Are you there?"
"I'm here," he croaked. "Here, by the bed."
A bucket of water arched through the air, sloshing against the floor and spattering Tungdil's beard. A moment later, a muffled figure wearing a dripping blanket charged into the chamber, grabbed Tungdil by the wrist, and dragged him out of the inferno to the safety of the landing.
"Tungdil!"
At once, Mir was beside him, crouching over him anxiously. She seemed more upset by the incident than he was, upset and slightly guilty.
"What happened?"
"It was my fault," he whispered in a rasping voice. "I knocked the candle." "Take Mr. Goldhand downstairs," interrupted the sooty-faced man. "I need everyone out of the corridor so he can put out the flames."
The innkeeper's wife helped Mir to carry Tungdil downstairs to the main tavern.
"This is for you and your husband," said Mir, handing the woman a gold coin. "I can't thank you enough. Tungdil would have burned to death without you."
Black smoke was still billowing from the landing.
"We'll pay for the damage, whatever it costs."
The woman thanked her and hurried away to help her husband.
"What am I to do with you, Tungdil Goldhand?" said Mia. "I leave you alone for 2 seconds, and you set fire to the bed."
She hugged him tightly. "You gave us both a nasty shock."
"Where were you?"
he asked, wrapping his sooty arms around her.
"We were preparing the infusion. The housemaid was making such a din with the pots and pans that we didn't realize the room was on fire until the innkeeper shouted for help."
She swallowed and buried her head in his chest.
"Get some sleep," she said tearfully. "I'm never going to leave you alone again, not ever. You're all I care about. I've learned my lesson. Thank goodness you didn't die."
She hugged him tenderly.
Chapter 4 Kingdom of Goregar, Gerdlegard, Late Autumn 6235th Solar Cycle. The fire was put out before the flames could consume the rest of the inn. Only the roof above the upstairs chamber and the chamber itself were destroyed in the blaze. 2 orbits later, after plenty of rest, regular doses of Mir's herbal infusion and generous helpings of the landlady's broth, Tungdil was ready to start walking again. Mir knew of a secret entrance to the underground network, and they covered the final miles of the journey at breathtaking speed. On arrival in Trovegold, they went straight to the stronghold to make their report to the king. Sander Flameheart was with Gemmell when they were ushered into the room. She seemed delighted to see Tungdil, but her relief turned to trepidation when he recounted the news from Parista. From time to time she glanced suspiciously at Mir, who ignored her steadfastly, perhaps because she hadn't noticed, or because she didn't care.
"Our realm is in great danger," judged Gemmell. "If we don't leave our cities, the Thirdlings will take them by force."
"Glaimbar said that you're welcome to join the Fifthlings," Tungdil told him. "Your warriors saved his kingdom from the orcs. He said it's the least he can do to give you passage and assistance over the Northern Pass. He knows the Fifthlings can't repay their debt, but they'll do what they can to help."
Gemmell could tell from Tungdil's tone that he doubted the wisdom of the proposal. He also realized Tungdil had spoken of the Fifthlings as if they weren't his folk. It probably wasn't deliberate. Gemmell suspected that he didn't consider himself a Fifthling anymore. Tungdil had rebuilt the Fifthling halls, as Giselbert had requested, but the Grey Range had ceased to be his home.
"You think we shouldn't leave Gerdlegard," said Gemmell, tackling the matter head-on.
"I think leaving would be a mistake," said Tungdil forthrightly. He proceeded to list the key points of his speech to Gandogar and the delegates. This time his arguments didn't fall on deaf ears.
"Those are all good points," said Gemmell. "Still, you can't know for sure that Romo was lying. How are you going to stop the Thirdlings from poaching our strongholds without putting Gerdlegard at risk?"
"I can do it."
"With your help," replied Tungdil.
"Think of the Thirdlings' proposal as an ordinary business deal.
Would you pay for something without asking to see it first?
Lorimbas is asking us to buy a diamond in a poke."
He could tell from the king's face that he agreed.
"Wouldn't it be better to verify that the item exists? We need to know that the Thirdlings are capable of stopping the Avatars. If they aren't, Gerdlegard will need every warrior at her disposal. We'll be sealing her fate if we leave."
Gemmell turned to Sander.
"What do you think?" 60 cycles is the blink of an eye in dwarven history," she said slowly. "No one mentioned a secret archive when I was in the Black Range. We talked a lot about the Black Saddle because our ancestors are buried in its chambers. But there was never any mention of an archive or a weapon. Lorimbas's story doesn't ring true."
"A great deal can happen in 60 cycles, argued Mir. "Think how much has changed in Trovegold in the past 60 orbits. You can't presume to know what the Thirdlings are thinking or doing.
We'd need better evidence than that. She eyed Sander scornfully before turning to Gemmell. I think you should be careful. For all we know, Lorimbas could be telling the truth.
Tungdil was taken aback. Whose side are you on? He said indignantly.
Yours, of course, she said soothingly, taking his hand. Fearlessness and daring are excellent qualities in a warrior, but an overhasty decision could be the ruin of Gerdlegard, not just the dwarves.
She gave his fingers a little squeeze.
I'm your very own voice of reason. I'll offer good counsel and be right behind you whatever you decide.
There's another thing you should consider, said Sander. Are you prepared for a life like mine? If you defy the High King, you'll be punished. You won't be Tungdil Goldhand, hero of the Black Saddle. You'll be an outcast. This isn't a minor infraction of the rules, it's rank disobedience, possibly treason. Your sentence will be harsh.
She took a deep breath.
They could banish you for good. You might never be allowed back to the Fithlings.
Tungdil smiled at Mir.
As soon as I arrived here, I felt like Trovegold was my home. I like being with dwarves who follow Vrakus without enslaving themselves to petty rules. Besides, my heart is melded to Mir's.
Though he spoke with conviction, he couldn't help thinking of Belindis.
She made her decision. I made mine.
He added defensively before his inner demon could comment.
You don't fool me. A small voice mocked him.
Gemmell looked him in the eye.
You seem to know what you're getting yourself into, he said levelly. Why don't you tell us what you propose? You can count on the Freelings to play their part.
Tungdil told them his plan. Boringar's folk, eastern border of the Firstling Kingdom, Gerdlegard, early winter, 6,235th solar cycle. It was snowing again. In no time the nine towers and twin ramparts of East Ironhald, recently rebuilt by the Firstlings, were covered in glittering white. Everyone, no matter how young or old, had helped to clear the debris and restore the stronghold to its former glory. Even the gully leading up to the stronghold boasted six new fortified gates. The masons had learned from the mistakes of their predecessors, and the fortifications, including the towers and bridges, were designed to withstand three times the previous winter's snowfall. Barriers had been erected further up the mountainside. Thick stone slabs and long mounds of rubble protruded from the slope, ready to trap the White Death before it smothered the dwarves below. At the base of the gully, the first of the six gates, built to withstand snow and ice, formed a formidable defense against invaders, including Lorimbas Steelheart and his dwarves. Tasked with searching the portal for a lever, handle, or secret mechanism, Salfalor could find only a freshly polished block of stone that had once bidden visitors, friendly visitors, to enter. The inscription had been chiseled off.
No luck!
He called out to Lorimbas. He and his warriors were wearing thick woolen cloaks, hats and scarves over their armor to protect them from the biting cold. The king, as a mark of his status, had draped a fur stole over his shoulders and was wearing the royal helmet.
The gates won't open, explained Salfalor. We'll have to climb over.
Confounded firstlings, thundered the king, his voice echoing through the valley. They did it to spite us.
The heavy-set commander trudged through the snow toward him, sinking deeper with every step.
It's only a minor setback, Your Majesty. Samti's stronghold will soon belong to Lorimbur.
He shouted for ropes and grappling hooks to be brought to the base of the gates. Climbing equipment wasn't usually to be found in dwarven kit bags, not least because dwarves weren't suited to dangling from ropes. But after receiving reports from two of his units, Salfalor had come prepared.
According to the bulletins from the north and northeast of Girdlegard, the gates to Glaimbar and Gandagar's kingdom had been locked. The entrances had been barricaded so thoroughly that not even a mouse could get through.
"I wouldn't count on it," muttered Lorimbas angrily. "Zamtis will have copied the others, I bet."
He was already expecting to receive news from the south that the Secondling stronghold was impregnable too. It was like forging hot metal on an anvil, only to have the hammer snatched from his hand. Even more frustratingly, there weren't any dwarfs for him to kill.
"Normally, I ask Vrakas to guide your hand and bless your hammer, but I know how little you care about the smith," called a loud voice that seemed to come from the mountain.
Just then a dwarf appeared on the parapet above the gates.
"I'll keep it short. Greetings, King Lorimbas Steelheart of the Clan of the Stone Grinders, ruler of the Thirdlings."
Salphalor recognized the figure immediately and signaled to Lorimbas, who clenched his fists in fury.
"Tongdil Goldhand, I presume. You murdered my nephew."
"Your nephew tried to kill an innocent dwarf," retorted Tongdil. "He chose his own fate. Ask Lotrabur's murderer, if you like."
"I'll skin you alive," thundered Lorimbas, drawing his axe.
"You'll have to catch me first," said Tongdil, laughing. "In case you hadn't noticed, shouting won't open the gates."
He leaned over the parapet confidently, reminding Lorimbas that he had the upper hand.
"Incidentally, you might want to keep your voice down. The White Death will come thundering down the mountainside if it hears you screeching like a hairless orc."
He made a show of scanning the surrounding peaks.
"I didn't realize the Red Range was so dangerous. How many warriors have you brought? 5,000? And where's the famous weapon that you promised the men and elves?"
"It's none of your business. Get out of my kingdom."
"I'm the one on the inside. The kingdom belongs to me. I'll open the gates on one condition. That you show me the weapon and tell me how it works."
The Thirdling King raised his axe menacingly.
"We had an agreement. Gandagar will be furious when he hears about this. He'll hew your miserable..."
"I'm a Thirdling," said Tongdil undaunted.
Drawing his axe, he pointed it at Salphalor.
"Ask him, if you don't believe me. He killed my mother and father and threw me into a chasm. But Vrakas saved me and brought me here to save Girdlegard from your lies."
Tongdil clasped his axe in both hands and drew himself up to his full height, standing tall and proud like a true custodian of the gates.
"Where's the weapon, Lorimbas?"
Salphalor gave a signal, and a band of Thirdlings prepared to scale the walls. Tongdil smiled.
"Is that how you're going to fight off the Avatars, with climbing ropes and grappling hooks?"
He paused.
"There's something you should know. I'm not alone."
Boindil appeared at his left, and Boendal at his right, weapons aloft and faces grimly determined.
"This is definitely in breach of the agreement," said Salphalor. "I know those two, they're secondlings."
"Not anymore," chimed in Boindil,
twirling his axes impatiently. He was clearly spoiling for a fight.
"We're freelings now."
Gemmell appeared on the parapet.
"They're with me."
On Gemmell's signal, the rampart filled with dwarves carrying shields, clubs, axes, and other weapons. Some of them deposited rocks on the edge of the parapet, ready to hurl them at the Thirdlings in the event of an attack.
"A few of my warriors from Trovegold," explained Gemmell. "The battalions from Gemtrove and the other cities are guarding the stronghold. 10,000 dwarves, 6 gates, 2 ramparts, 9 towers, and a bridge lie between you and Zamtis Halls."
"You'll have me to reckon with as well," said a crimson-cloaked Namora, stepping up to the parapet.
"And me,"
called Rodario grandly, trying to look as imposing as possible. He was wearing a magnificent new robe for the occasion,
My name is Rodario the Fablemaker, apprentice to the mighty Namora the Unnerving, and second only to the Mager in skill and power.
Tungdil swung his axe above his head.
King Lorimbas, the choice is yours. Attack and expose your warriors to dwarven bombardment and the wrath of a Mager and her Famulus, against whose magic no mortal army can prevail, or show us the weapon and explain how it works.
The king scanned the ranks of defenders.
The weapon isn't here, he said, scowling. Our first priority is to take possession of our territory and secure our position.
Fine, but you and your warriors will have to wait until you've convinced us that the weapon really works.
I hope for your sake that it doesn't take long. It's cold outside.
He pointed to the right.
There's a cave over there. It should be big enough for half your army. The others will have to make do with blankets.
Psst, scholar, whispered Boindil. How are we going to know if the weapon really works?
Tungdil grinned. Did you see the look on Lorimbas's face? I thought Salfalor was going to scale the gates and tear me to pieces. Boindil looked at him blankly.
So what? In other words, whispered Boendal, Lorimbas and Salfalor are furious with us for seeing through their scam.
He smiled, relieved that their decision to follow Tungdil had been rewarded.
You were right, scholar. Lorimbas lied to the other rulers. The weapon doesn't exist.
Tungdil took little satisfaction in his victory, knowing that the news augured badly for Gerdlegard as a whole. Namora is our only hope. She'll have to delay the Avatars while we raise an army of innocents to fight them. The dwarven rulers and other monarchs must be informed.
Don't get ahead of yourselves, shouted Lorimbas from below. I'll have the weapon for you in two orbits. Prepare yourselves for a surprise.
We're happy to wait, if waiting will save our homeland, Tungdil called back.
He lowered his voice so that only his friends could hear.
They're bound to attack. They're going to use the time to find a way of breaking our defenses. Tell the sentries to be vigilant. We need to brace ourselves for an assault.
Boindil banged his axes together.
I'm not afraid of them. I don't like the notion of spilling dwarven blood, but what choice do we have? Vrakas, forgive us for raising our axes against his creation, but the Thirdlings have brought it on themselves.
Clansfolk!
Lorimbas's voice cut through the mountain air.
Thirdling clansfolk, who have strayed from the Black Range, deserters like Sander Flameheart, who left the Thirdling ranks. Your crimes will be forgiven. Turn back to the Thirdlings before it's too late.
More lies, Lorimbas, called Tungdil. Your trickery won't work.
Out of the corner of his eye, he watched as Sander glanced nervously from Gemmel to Mir, but her face betrayed no emotion. He couldn't help recalling Mir's warning.
Fine, Lorimbas. You've got two orbits. I can't wait to see the secret weapon that can destroy a band of demigods.
He backed away from the parapet until he was out of sight, with Namora and the others following suit. He didn't know whether to feel satisfied that his strategy had proven itself, or dismayed that his worst suspicions had been confirmed. All along, he had been secretly hoping that Lorimbas would surprise him by unveiling a mighty weapon capable of saving Gerdlegard from destruction. He was joined by Namora, who seemed to guess what he was thinking. What are we going to do now? She asked. We can't fight a battle on two fronts. Her dark, almost fathomless eyes gazed toward the west. After orbits of calm, the past few nights have been worse than ever. Judging by the fire on the horizon, the Avatars are dangerously close. She was glad that she hadn't brought her daughter with her. There could be no doubt that Dorsa would be safer with Resild in the palace than with her parents in the western range, but it didn't make the separation any easier to bear.
Can you stop the Avatars?
asked Tungdil. She gave a wry laugh. What can anyone do against 11 miniature deities? She looked crushed. Andukai studied for over 100 cycles and never attained the skill and knowledge she sought. I was her apprentice for half a cycle. She lowered her voice. No one knows how to stop them. We know nothing about them except that they're lethal. Nodon was right, Tungdil. He warned us about the Avatars, and we killed him. The only Magus with the power to destroy the Avatars is dead. She took a deep breath. We won't have many peaceful orbits like this. We shouldn't spoil it with gloomy thoughts. She turned to leave. I'll tell Fergus to load the catapults. Tell the sentries in West Ironhall to inform us of any developments, he said. I only hope we can resolve things with Lorimbas before the Avatars reach the border and Zamtis and her clansfolk are burned to death. Namora nodded and took her leave. She cured Fergus even though she said she couldn't, Mir said thoughtfully. Her powers must be increasing, don't you think? I hope she can handle it. We need her to be strong in spirit. Tungdil took her in his arms. What will become of us, Mir? Will we be killed by Lorimbas, or Salphalor, or reduced to ashes by a band of demigods? Is this the end of our adventure? She stroked his cheeks. I'm a medic, not a seer. I can't foretell the future, but I'll always be right behind you. After what happened last time, I won't be letting you out of my sight. You could have died because of me, and nothing is going to stop me being there if you need me. Not Salphalor, not the Avatars, nothing. She looked at the dwarves thronging back to the warmth of East Ironhald. I'll make sure my medicine bag is properly stocked. I'll need it, if Lorimbas attacks. They won't breach the gates. What if they don't have to? She glanced across at Sander, who was giving orders to the guards behind the fortified wall. She'll ruin everything, murmured Mir. Someone needs to keep an eye on her, and it had better be me. Two orbits were over in no time. Tungdil, Namora, and the twins took up a position on the ramparts and waited for Lorimbas to spin them another story or launch an attack. Any idea what they've been doing? Tungdil asked the sentry. Singing. Standing right here and singing. Songs about battles. Songs about the other dwarves. Most of them highly offensive. They wouldn't shut up. It was clear from his tone that the lyrics had incensed him. We couldn't sleep because of the noise. But the main thing is, they couldn't bring down the gates with their voices. They've started again, said Boendal, pointing to the crowds of siblings emerging from the cave. They're singing their hearts out. The thirdling warriors lined up in rows, the front row as long as the gates were wide. Still singing, they marched toward the mouth of the gully with Lorimbas at their head. He came to a halt some 30 paces from the gates. I thought you were going to show us the weapon, Lorimbas, called Tungdil sarcastically. Don't say you forgot.
There never was a weapon, Tungdil Goldhand, you traitor, bellowed the thirdling king. Know this before you die. Your wise dwarven friends, the oh-so-clever humans, and the snotty-nosed elves, fell for our ruse. The Avatars don't exist.
So now you're pretending we were never in danger, scoffed Tungdil, signalling to Gemmell's warriors to heft their weapons. I can't fault your resourcefulness. What have you lined up next?
Your destruction. Right now 4,000 warriors are marching on West Ironhald. They'll storm your defences from the west while I lead the rest of my army to victory from the east. No dwarf, no Maga, and no god can stop my conquest of the dwarven kingdoms. My spies have served me well. Where's the fat one?
Hissed Boindil suspiciously, scanning the enemy ranks.
I can't see him anywhere. What happened to the others?
There were 5,000 of them not so long ago. 1,000 are missing at least.
You're right. Something funny is going on. Tungdil turned back to Lorimbas.
If the avatars don't exist, how do you explain the fire burning on the horizon night after night?
Can you do magic, Lorimbas?
The Thirdling King chuckled.
Oh, yes! I can do magic. Even without your Maegor's powers, I can conjure dwarves to the outer lands and harness the power of sulfur to make gullible dwarves like you quake in their boots at the sight of my mighty conflagration. But how did you... A real hero would have explored the Black Saddle and uncovered its secrets,
Lorimbas taunted.
You were in our stronghold and you never suspected how valuable it was. We've got our own system of tunnels built by our ancestors many cycles ago. From the Black Saddle, we can attack in all directions. I heard you were expecting trouble from the west, so I invented a threat.
You're lying, Lorimbas.
The whole of Girdlygard is shaking like a leaf because I set off a few fireworks in the outer lands,
crowed Lorimbas.
What about the comet? No catapult in Girdlygard has the power to...
The comet was real, all right. A happy coincidence for us. It landed in the outer lands and left a big crater. Some of my spies saw it fall. They didn't spot an avatar, unless he was made of lava.
He slapped his thigh and shrieked with laughter.
To think you took the comet as a sign that no Don was right! You would have done anything I said to protect yourself from the imaginary threat.
You made the dwarves leave their kingdoms, murmured Tungdil.
What happens next is up to you. Either open the gates and leave with your lives, or wait for us to cut you down. My warriors will show no mercy.
Namora stared at the Thirdling King. All lies. I lost my child. Andukai died by my hand, and Fergus was in a coma, all because of his scheming. Her eyes darkened to fathomless hollows as she lifted her arms, causing the dwarves around her to shrink away.
Lorimbas Steelheart, you will die for your treachery, she called menacingly.
Not as soon as you think, witch,
he retorted, raising his horn to his lips. A moment later the ground caved in, causing the fortified wall to collapse. The defending dwarves crashed to the ground. Most of those on the parapets were crushed by stone blocks the size of a fully grown dwarf, or buried under falling debris. No sooner had the final block come to rest than the Thirdlings surged forward, clambering over the rubble and throwing themselves on the startled defenders whose leaders had fallen with the gates. Worse was to come. Amid the commotion, Trovegol's warriors heard picks and hammers breaking through the frozen ground behind them. Soon they were confronted with the missing Thirdlings. As 1,000 warriors led by the ferocious Salphalor emerged from a hastily built tunnel and attacked from the rear. The first battle began. By dusk, the bodies of 3,000 defenders lay strewn between the first two gates, and the Thirdlings were singing victory songs to Lorimbur. Tungdil and the twins had managed to drag the wounded Namora from the rubble and carry her through the second gate before the Thirdlings noticed. Gemmel, Sander, and 900 badly shaken warriors had also survived the assault. Eyes closed, Namora was concentrating on healing her wounds. The skin grew back faster than water rising in a well. She leaped to her feet. I'm going to make that treacherous Thirdling pay for his...
No, Namora, said Tungdil. We're abandoning the first 5 gates. I don't want to lose more of our warriors to the Thirdling's underhanded tactics. Save your strength for defending the stronghold.
Namora was about to reply when Mir ran up.
Come quickly, Maegor, she called. You'll never guess what the sentries have found on the western border. More warriors for me to tend?
Just one, said Mia. It's Jerun, estimable Magar. At least, I think it is.
Great, snorted Boindil. First Andukai, now Namora. Where the heck are these Jeruns coming from?
More to the point,
who are they being sent by? Muttered Tungdil.
You're a genius, Boindil.
Thank you.
The secondling paused.
Why?
The little group hurried after Mir, who was racing across the bridge to the stronghold.
You raise an excellent question, and I don't think Lorimbas will have an answer for it. Which is worrying. Very worrying.
He exchanged glances with Mir, who seemed to share his concern. Jerun, or rather, what was left of Jerun, was lying on the floor. His armor looked old and battered, with countless scratches, scorch marks and dings. It was obvious from the broken-off swords, lances and spikes embedded in his mail that his journey had been fraught with danger. He was smeared all over with bright yellow blood, and he hadn't stirred since their arrival.
Said Boindil, scratching his beard. Can anyone speak Jerush?
All eyes were turned on Namora.
I'm sorry, she said. The Magar didn't teach me his language. She took the secret with her when she died.
Where's my mistress?
Rasped a strange voice inside her head.
Listen, exclaimed Boindil. Did you hear him growling? Come on, Buckethead, speak a language we understand.
Fearlessly, he took a few steps toward him.
You'd better not be an imposter.
He leaned over and peered at the visor.
Balindis would know from the metalwork.
His stubby fingers reached for the beak of the visor.
I'll take a peek at his face. Tell him to stop, said the voice to Namora,
who finally realized that Jerun was talking to her.
You've changed, half-elf. There's something inside you, something that belonged to Nodon. Ha! Listen to him growl, said Boindil, laughing. Don't you dare bite me!
He warned the armored giant, menacing him with the blunt edge of his axe.
I'll wallop your metal skull so hard you'll...
That's enough, Boindil, snapped Namora. I know what he's saying after all.
Her lips moved effortlessly, forming strange syllables that came to her of their own accord.
It must be the malachite, she thought.
It's not the malachite, it's the energy within it, said Nudine, appearing at Jerun's side. It's more powerful than you think.
Suddenly he was gone.
I must be hallucinating, thought Namora, blaming it on the fall from the parapet. I'm probably still concussed.
Your mistress is dead, Jerun, she told the giant, hoping that the others hadn't noticed her distraction. She was murdered by a giant wearing your armor. Can you tell me what happened?
Are you the new Magar?
Why won't he get up?
Asked Boindil impatiently, prodding him in the chest with the haft of his axe.
Maybe he's asleep. Are you sure he's not snoring, Namora? Be quiet,
his brother shushed him, tugging him away.
Do you want him to eat you alive?
He's not armed, is he? What's a half-dead giant going to do to a warrior like me? If he doesn't stop prodding me, I'll rip through his chainmail and tear him in two,
Jerun told Namora.
Answer my question. Are you the new Magar?
It wasn't my choice, she paused. The late Magar's legacy will abide in me forever. They call me Namora the Unnerving.
You were her Famula, and you worship her god. Namora the Unnerving will be my new mistress.
She sent you to the Outer Lands. What did you see?
My strength is fading, mistress. I need your help,
Did Andrakai have an incantation or a...
I don't need magic, mistress, he said, lifting his head a little.
Hurrah! Whooped Boindil, edging closer. Old Buckethead is alive! Assuming it's really him.
Boindil! Chorused the others disapprovingly. He shrugged moodily and kept quiet, although no one believed for a moment that the silence would last.
I need your blood, mistress.
My blood?
The blood of a Maegar is more nourishing than my prey. It will give me power and bind me to you.
Everyone out, said Namora, trying to hide her agitation. I need to heal Jerun's wounds. The incantation is powerful. I don't want anyone getting hurt. The others traipsed out reluctantly, dragging the protesting Boindil with them. As soon as Namora was alone with Jerun, she kneeled beside him, heart thumping in her chest, and rolled up the sleeve of her robe. Jerun raised a hand to his visor and flipped it open. It was all Namora could do not to run away. Like Belindis, she was filled with terror at the sight of his face. She held out her wrist.
It will hurt, mistress, he told her.
Without warning, his head sped forward, and he sank his teeth into her arm, slitting the flesh from wrist to elbow. His lipless mouth sucked the wound. Namora felt instantly lightheaded. Every drop of blood seemed to be draining from her body. At last, when she was certain she would faint, Jerun released her, and she sank to the floor, murmuring an incantation to close the wound. Jerun's eyes shone violet, the light becoming brighter and stronger, more dazzling than the sun. Beneath his armor, something was rustling, cracking, clicking. A lance dropped to the floor from his breastplate, followed by a hail of broken sword tips, arrowheads, and spikes.
Your blood is good, mistress, roared Jerun,
with the energy of a young god.
You taste like Andrakai, only powerful, more powerful. You're a good Maegar, strong and full of healing.
He got to his feet like a warrior raring for battle after a good night's sleep. Bowing his armored head to Namora, he began his account.
Andrakai sent me to look for the Avatars. I crossed the Red Range, marched across the flatlands, and came upon a raging fire and a band of dwarves. My mission was to look for Avatars, not groundlings, so I continued on my way. Next, I came to a crater 4 times as big as the gully and full of glowing, bubbling rock. The land beyond was charred and barren. I kept walking until I found the strewn remains of human soldiers. Wayurnians, as I realized from the crests on their blackened armor. Soon afterward, I saw an army. The warriors carried white banners with 10 different crests, and their armor was white. So white it hurt my eyes. Their mounts were whiter than any horse in Gerdlagard. I watched them from a distance to find out who they were and where they were going, but they discovered my hiding place and came for me with their swords. For every warrior I killed, 4 others took his place, and 4 became 8. At length, they overwhelmed me and brought me before 7 beings, each surrounded by a ring of light that dazzled my eyes. They were wreathed in purity, and I couldn't see their faces. They asked me where I came from, and I didn't reply. So they tormented me with kindness, love, and warmth. But I didn't die like they hoped. Summoning my strength, I broke away, anxious to tell my mistress of what I had witnessed. They called after me that the good, pure souls of Gerdlagard should fear no more. Soon they said the evil that had inhabited our kingdoms for cycles would be banished,
and Teon and the Spirit of Evil would play Gerdlegard no more. I ran for many suns and moons until I found the hidden path to the Firstling's stronghold.
Namora stroked her arm, marveling at the smooth, healthy skin.
So that's why the Avatars are marching on Gerdlegard. They think we're still in the clutches of Nodon and the Perished Land. No one's told them that the Magus was defeated.
Thank you, Jerun, she said pensively.
What about the dwarves, mistress?
What about them? They were thirdlings.
Not the dwarves near the fire, I mean the others. Some of the warriors from the White Army followed me. They must have found the dwarves by now. The thirdlings and the dwarves on the mountain tracks.
The Maga nodded. She didn't much care what happened to the thirdling fire raisers, but she was concerned about Zamtis and her dwarves. She left Jerun and walked out into the corridor where Tungdil and the others were waiting. As soon as she opened the door, they looked at her expectantly. She could see the curiosity in their eyes.
We were right to fear the Avatars. They're on their way.
Their curiosity turned to shock.
The angry little midgets might listen to reason, said Rodario, feeling the weight of the silence. We need to tell them that the Avatars are real.
Tungdil, Gemmel, Namora, the twins, and various dwarven dignitaries were in a meeting to discuss the coming threat. Meanwhile, Salfalor and his warriors were barreling through the Firstling's defences. 300 Thirdlings had died in traps rigged by Fergus, but nothing could deter the fanatical dwarf killers. Very soon they would succeed in conquering the stronghold, and the last resistance to their treachery would be crushed. But neither Lorimbas nor his warriors suspected that the Avatars were real. Boindil burst out laughing.
Trust you to want to talk them into submission? Just imagine, the fabulous Rodario!
The impresario raised a hand to silence him.
Rodario, the fable maker,
he corrected him. Perhaps my short-legged, hot-headed friend could take the trouble to address me by my proper title. Boindil put his hands on his hips.
Since when have you been a wizard? You're just a cheap conjurer with the good fortune to be acquainted with Fergus, a technician of dwarven intelligence and skill.
He tapped his forehead in mock excitement.
Maybe you could hold a poetry reading for the thirdlings. Remember how you tried to talk the runts to death?
There's no need to be rude, Master Ironheart. It was merely a suggestion.
A bad one.
In your opinion.
Useless, actually.
You can do better, I suppose.
Quiet,
both of you, cut in Namora. She glared at Rodario. He's right, by the way. Talking to the thirdlings won't change anything.
Gang up on me, why don't you? He said, offended. I was merely suggesting that we should explain the situation. The thirdlings have guarded the Black Range for cycles. They might be murderous traitors, but they've done their duty in defending the Eastern Pass.
Boendal made a clicking sound with his tongue.
I suppose he's got a point. We could give it a go, but we'll need some proper proof. The thirdlings won't be any more inclined to trust us than we trust them.
I've sent word to Zamtis that the thirdlings were lying, said Tungdil. I've warned her about the Avatars. I'm praying that the message will get to her in time.
The door flew open.
You're needed at the inner gates, gasped the agitated dwarf. Come quickly! They've nearly broken through!
I hate to say it, but Lorimbur's children know a thing or two about fighting, growled Boindil,
jumping up, axes at the ready, and following the dwarf.
Luckily I'm here to show them that you don't need marks on your face to be a good warrior.
He laughed.
Let's give the thirdlings some new tattoos.
In spite of the bluster, Tungdil could tell that his friend wasn't nearly as excited about slaying thirdlings as he was about killing orcs, Bognilim, and other beasts.
Deep down, he doubted that they could hold the gates. The Red Range is living up to its name. The gully will be awash with blood before the orbit is out. The dwarves' hopes rested with Narmora's magic, Jeroen's strength, and Fergus's technical expertise. Tungdil, after witnessing the first battle, had been awed by the Thirdling's discipline, power, and axemanship. No matter what happens, Salfalor won't leave here alive. Tungdil was determined to kill him, whatever the cost. Taking up his axe, he left the hall and hurried over the bridge to the highest of the nine towers from which he could survey the action. It was an incredible sight. Fighting wasn't the Thirdling's only talent. Lorimbas's warriors had built a three-sided tower out of the rubble of the fallen gates. The front edge of the tower was pointing straight at the twin ramparts of East Ironhald, and from Tungdil's vantage point, it looked like an enormous guillotine. The structure, built at an angle, was supported by struts to which ropes had been attached. Tungdil watched as 50 warriors stepped forward, took hold of the ropes, and pulled. The struts came away, the tower tilted forward, slowly at first, then faster and faster, until it hit the ramparts, smashing through the fortifications like a colossal blade. The stronghold had been breached, allowing the Thirdlings to charge forward.
"The Freeling shouldn't have let them build the tower," said Boindil, gazing down at Gemmell's dwarves.
He frowned.
"Fighting isn't their forte. In terms of pure numbers, we've got the advantage. Not that you can tell."
They left the tower and waited for the system of platforms and pulleys to lower them to the ground.
"Zamtis had better hurry, or Lorimbas will be sitting on her throne," said Boindil, darkly as they hurried to the defender's aid.
Tungdil spotted the broad-shouldered commander in the front line of Thirdlings. His long-handled hammer curved through the air, felling Freelings with every stroke. "I'll deal with Salfalor," he said, closing his fingers around the haft of his axe. "You take Lorimbas." Molten slag poured down on the invaders from above, followed by a torrent of petroleum, which ignited as if by magic as it neared the Thirdling troops. On the left flank of the defending army, the sky was dark with fiery smoke. Narmora and Rodario were doing everything in their power to keep the Thirdlings at bay. In the Maegar's case, the magic was real, whereas Rodario relied on conjuring tricks and imaginary curses. Meanwhile, Jeroen endeavoured to protect them from attack. But even the colossal warrior did little to deter the Thirdlings, who jabbed at him from a distance with lances and pikes. Despite their efforts, the invaders had yet to reach the ramp leading to the inner rampart. The Thirdlings would have to breach the gates, ascend the highest tower, and cross the bridge to conquer Zamti's halls. While the gates still stood, the Thirdlings could kill as many defenders as they liked without taking the kingdom for themselves. Tungdil fought his way to the front, keeping Salfalor in his sights. Just then he heard a piercing scream. "Mir." Turning, he spotted her at the gates. She was sprawled on the ground, a few paces from her medicine bag, and Sander Flameheart was standing over her, threatening her with a single-balled flail. Behind them, the gates to the inner rampart had opened slightly. The Thirdlings saw their chance.
"Mir was right," thought Tungdil,
pushing his way through the throng of warriors to rescue his companion.
"Sander is a traitor, and I fell for her act."
Before he could reach her, Ironheart jumped in and sent Sander crashing to the ground. Tungdil hurried to help Mir. Her right cheek bore a fiery handprint, the thumb and forefingers burning red against her smooth, pale skin. Blood was trickling from her mouth and nose.
"She opened the gates,"
she croaked as Tungdil helped her to her feet.
"I couldn't stop her."
"It's not your fault," he said, kissing her brow and thanking Vrakas for Boindil's speedy intervention.
"Quick! We need to close them."
They hurried through the gates. Tungdil cursed when he saw the traitor's work.
Sander had sabotaged the mechanism, and the chain lay abandoned on the ground. By now, Sander had scrambled to her feet and was